Mr. Snyder! Mr. Snyder! Is there any truth in reports that Michael is only rated Air Force One 2 stars on Letterboxd?
How will this affect the podcast standing on the TV and film charts?
Is Ryan really not on the episode?
Please, please, people, please. I can confirm, sadly, that Ryan will not be on the Air Force One episode. And that Michael has indeed rated Air Force One only 2 stars on Letterboxd.
No! Oh! Does this mean that Apocalypse Video won't be able to recommend the movie?
What were your thoughts on the movie, sir?
Without Ryan on the episode, will you be able to recommend the movie to a 2/3 majority?
Can Jackie mail in her rating?
With this bad rating, is Michael still part of Apocalypse Video?
Please, people, please. I am working with Michael to revise his rating in order for us to be able to recommend the film as a whole to the people of the Wasteland for this inaugural episode of Airpool. Secondly, no, Jackie will not be able to mail in her rating of the film, as she gets no phone service in the air vents and the grate to the main access area is stuck shut. And yes, Michael is still a part of the podcast video.
When will we hear your thoughts on the episode, sir?
I am reconvening with my staff shortly. I will let you know when we have more information and if we were able to reverse Michael's rating on the film so we can give it a full recommendation. I'm sorry, I have no further comment at this time except to ask the people of the Wasteland to pray. Please pray that Michael comes to his senses and gives Air Force One a good rating. That's all I have for now. I'm sorry.
Mr. Snyder, what about the bomb down that I've given you to go?
All right, Mike. I bought us some time. Time enough for you to reconsider your rating on a great American film. I still can't believe you only gave this thing 2 stars. You know, you're not making this decision as a member of Apocalypse Video. You're making it as a filmfrization snob! Now, I have a sworn affidavit right here that says you give Air Force One at least 3 stars so that we could properly recommend this movie to the masses. Need I remind you that with Ryan and Jackie gone, if you give this movie only 2 stars and I give this movie 4 stars, it doesn't reach the level of full recommendation and it doesn't count!
History will judge you very harshly for your decision, Michael. Now, for God's sake, revise your rating!
No. I will not abandon my principles. And I will never re-rate a movie that is mid at best. The people have a right to know my honest feelings on Air Force One, and they will get them. Because I do not negotiate with terrorists or video store owners who want to influence my rating. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got a movie to review. And some tapes to check in.
This April, one man will refuse to abandon his standards for action. All April long, Apocalypse Video is celebrating the best of high-flying, show-stopping thrills from the 90s.
Sir, pull up! We got one on your tail!
Get him off my tail!
Everything from Air Force One to Con Air.
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get Air Force One?
Political thrillers to skydiving escapades.
Go for the tires! Fuck the tires! I go for the pilot! Oh!
All the action you could want from the decade that excelled in lighting up the skies. For the inaugural flight of Airpool, Apocalypse Video welcomes you to the most secure airplane on the planet. As Gary Oldman and his fanatical Russian cohorts hijack President Harrison Ford's plane and force him to release a genocidal general from prison, or they will execute hostages. In Wolfgang Peterson's political thriller, Air Force One, strap in and hold on for the ride of your life. as Apocalypse Video brings you Airport.
Tonight I come to you with a pledge to change America's policy. Atrocity and terror are not political weapons, and to those who would use them, your day is over.
In a speech tonight in Moscow, the president issued a direct challenge to terrorist nations around the world.
But the question remains, what are the risks involved in such a bold policy initiative?
They hated your speech, didn't they?
We're afraid we won't have the guts to back it up.
Air Force One, clear for takeoff. Thank you for your hospitality, Moscow.
Where's my family?
The president's plane, Air Force One, has been hijacked.
What do they want?
They want General Raddick released from prison.
I will execute the hostage every half an hour.
What are our airborne scenarios?
There are no airborne scenarios.
My husband will not negotiate.
His wife, his daughter, I think he'll negotiate.
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get Air Force One?
Your national security advisor has been executed.
He just bought you another half hour.
Sir, your parachute.
I'm not leaving without my family.
You know who I am?
I'm the President of the United States.
Jim isn't making this decision as a president. He's making it as a husband and a father.
Go! Let's not forget this president is a Medal of Honor winner. He knows how to fight.
He has no right to take chances with his life.
Cannot give in to their demands. You've got a job to do.
It makes me so proud, Mr. President, that you stuck with us.
You know your father, he has also killed.
You're nothing like my father.
We're tracking 6 MiGs. I'm sending in our F-15s to protect you.
She said MiGs? In a war, people die.
The president is up there with a gun to his head.
I'll do anything to save my family. Don't ask me for something I can't give.
Finish this with one phone call!
No.
This is the Air Force One break off!
Here we are. I guess this is on the record now. This is our review of Air Force One, the inaugural episode for Airpool. I'm your host, Dave. I wish I had better news, but this guy, Mike, will just not negotiate.
Dave, peace isn't merely the absence of conflict, but the presence of the American military. I mean, the presence of justice.
Holy shit. This movie, it plays a little differently now, decades later, doesn't it?
I mean, I'm going to say this is... this is a conservative, like, wet dream, this movie. 100%, this is a movie that, you know, we don't have to talk about this, but it's a movie that a certain someone, I'm sure, watches late at night and is like, yes, this is me. This is just how...
Well, if we're talking about a certain someone, apparently when you look in the Chattopedia for this movie, he would play the opening track, the score to this movie when the Marines are parachuting in, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He would use that on his campaign trail, and he used it like after he won the first time, and that led and like a lot of popular artists whose music he co-opted, they asked him to stop using that music.
Which is funny because, you know, I think one of the strengths of this movie is when it's so ridiculous. Like, the idea that this would be like any realistic depiction of anything is like a little laughable.
It's certainly over the top. Like, you're right. This is a conservative wet dream where the president of the United States just like, no, they're bad guys. We're going to go in. We're going to take them out. Like, to hell with approvals from Congress.
The movie
anything.
Starts with him being like, fuck diplomacy. The only way to win is like, we've tried like diplomacy. That's for pussies.
Sanctions.
We're going to bomb them to hell. Like...
Well, it's a little like, so they mentioned like, so this is 1997. This is obviously, like, you know, things have changed in Russia at this point. The movie begins, there's like a fictional, I guess, Russian general named Raddick. Basically, I forget his name, but the guy who played the Russian bad guy in all the films in like the 80s and 90s. I forget his name.
This is their in Kazakhstan, right? Like the big baddie in this. I think so. The big baddie in this movie is basically there's like a dictator going on in Kazakhstan who's killing all of the civilians in Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we
watched it on TV for a year. We didn't do anything.
This is like that period in the 90s where Russia and America were like best buds. And so Russia and America are sort of like the adversary is not Russia. It's the former Soviet Union state of Kazakhstan.
The zealots.
Yeah.
And so the movie opens. We get these military guys, these U.S. military guys parachuting in. They storm the capital. I guess it is Kazakhstan, and that's where this Radek guy is held up.
Yeah.
And they storm into his palace. They there's only like eight guys, right? It's not a big strike team.
No. A lot of explosions, though. Seals. There's like more than eight explosions for the eight guys.
Yeah, there's a ton of explosions. They go in, they parachute in, they plant some bombs on the roof, they go in, they cut the power, they get Radek out, they shoot some guys. They do have one casualty, but they get him out, they blow the roof, and they're like, all right, mailman, the package is wrapped, you know?
This to me felt very like, almost like a James Bond type intro.
Yeah, it did. Like, this movie's got action.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, this movie got nominated for two Oscars, Film Editing and Best Sound.
Yes! Best thing I would say about this movie for me was the sound design. I thought it was, like, incredible. I watched this in the Atmos it's one of those ones where I'm like,
see, I told you it was worth giving up a month's salary.
I'm glad you for once, for that brief 2-hour runtime, I was happy that you used my salary to buy a subwoofer. That subwoofer, I was like thinking, like, all right, it's paying for itself during this movie for sure.
Oh yeah. And honestly, like, when you're like, well, what did it lose to? Like, this movie, the sound in this movie is incredible.
And I feel like 97 was, I'm gonna guess, a good year for sound design. Like, wasn't Twister around then?
Actually, yeah, I think, because, well, no, that would have been in the 90s. So this would, I guess, would be the 98 Oscars.
Right.
Because this came out in 97. It lost, I think, appropriately to Titanic. I mean, Titanic's going to sweep the technical stuff for sure. But I mean, a huge honorable mention to Air Force One. Like, honestly, whatever your thoughts on the movie, if you're someone in the wrong and you're giving this movie 2 stars, for example, even that person could contest that the sound for this movie is incredible.
Absolutely. I mean, one of those stars. I'm looking here. I just want to say, do you know what else? One of the other movies that was nominated for Best Sound is a movie we're going to be talking about very shortly.
What, in April or?
In April.
Of course! Welcome to Con Air.
Yeah. And the other ones are Contact and L.A. Confidential.
L.A. Confidential?
Yeah, interesting. Huh. Interesting.
I'm going to have to rewatch that. I don't remember that movie for its sound, really.
Probably like some gunshots or something.
I guess.
Sound real good.
But yeah, Air Force One, if again, whatever your thoughts on the movie, you have to concede that the sound for this movie is incredible.
It's maybe the best. I'm not even trying to be like insulting to the movie about this. Like, it maybe is the best thing about the movie. Like, it's excellent. It's surprisingly good.
Like, it kind of goes into, yeah, the sound is incredible. It kind of goes into, I would say some of the CG effects aside, I think the audio experience and like the practicality of the gunshots and the bullet holes, the plane sounds, the plane flying over and all that stuff.
Yeah. It just sounds, a plane has never sounded as loud. Like, it feels like it has the effect I got with Twister, where I'm like, there's the lizard brain part of me that's getting nervous. Something is going wrong in the building. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, should we stop the movie and check and make sure, like, there isn't a plane about to crash into the house right now?
And the plane, like, the bass in this movie is so thunderous. Some planes fly overhead. You feel that shit, and especially with explosions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not just, like, loud. That's not it. It's just, like, it feels like you're in it. It's hard to explain, but it's excellently done.
And it's like I you really have to notate it because we you know we watch movies on the show, that's what we do. And we've I feel like we've had a few movies like Twister, for example, where like, man, the soundtrack is good, but like every once in a while you hear one like this where you're like, damn, the movies.
I think,
you
know? I'm starting to I don't know if it's what it is, but I feel like it is something I'm starting to appreciate more recently is just good sound design. Like yeah. It really does go a long way to, you know, the this would play so much differently watching on like TV speakers, you know?
Definitely. Yeah. You really appreciate it. And you really realize how often movies, you realize you're like, damn, are movies just kind of muddled? Is the sound design just kind of shit sometimes? Like what's going on?
I mean, it's not always this good. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. This is a standout. But anywho, I guess we should get into the plot of Air Force One. Oh, before we do, Mike, was this your first time?
This is my first time boarding Air Force One.
Wow.
I'll say, okay. Like, this to me was a movie that I probably saw, like, short snippets of on, like, TNT or Spike TV or, you know, whatever the dude TV was.
I feel like this got a lot of play on TNT.
Yeah, but I always, like, I never watched it. I always thought it would be, like, a dad movie, you know, in a way. Like, parentheses negative, because I was 12 or whatever, you know? Like, I didn't want to watch.
Well, you were blasting your Blink 182 CDs.
Right, exactly. I'm like, there's this old man Harrison Ford in a plane. Like, let me watch, like, Star Wars or something. You know, I don't know. Lord of the Rings or whatever I was watching at
I'm
that time.
I'm a little
time.
Surprised. Were you not, like, an Indiana Jones fan?
A huge Indiana Jones fan. I loved Indiana Jones.
I'm kind of surprised. You're like, oh, it's Harrison Ford in an action movie?
I think I was like, yeah, this is boring Harrison Ford, though. You know, like, he's... I did think of... I didn't realize how action-y this movie was. And I didn't, in my mind, I didn't think of it. I thought of this as like, again, this is me as a kid. I would have been like, this is an adult talking about war. Like Tom Clancy. I categorized this with like Tom Clancy stuff. You know?
I thought it was maybe a more heady political thriller.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Watching this movie, before we get into the synopsis, watching this made me think this is 97. Era Harrison Ford, he's still looking good. I think he's still looking youthful. He would be, I think, in his early 50s at this point. And it made me wonder, it made me wish, like, God, I wish the fourth Indiana Jones movie would have come out around this time.
Yeah.
You know, I mean? I think he's still got it in this.
He does and he doesn't for me. I mean, this is where I get to maybe criticism territory or whatever, but
you think he's a little wonky, or what's the term? He's a little, he's showing his action.
I don't think he's old by any means. I don't think him being old is the problem.
Okay.
I think this is, I feel like we're getting, I haven't seen like all of Harrison Ford's movies in a row, so I don't know where on the line this happens, but I feel like I'm starting to see the beginning of, this I'm Harrison Ford, and
you know, really,
just kind of how I say all my lines is, yeah. Like there's, it's very like, very mumbly, low, gravelly. You know, eventually he does like. I feel like he's kind of like cartoonish in the way that he's kind of talks like that now, and just I don't know if that's an age thing or if it's just him not giving a crap or whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a little bit of column A and column B.
Yeah. So I feel like there's certainly parts of this where he's like, he kind of comes alive.
Intense.
But I feel like for most of this movie, it's a little bit in like, oh, is this the beginning of like mumble Harrison Ford?
Well,
you know,
I would argue because he just got like he's been doing, I would say it's more in line with the character at this point, like what the character, he just announces, I mean, we'll get into the plot in a bit, but like he announces this huge sweeping change of policy without like talking with anyone.
Yeah, like,
allies,
well, the movie opens with like that raid we talked about where they like free basically like a Saddam Hussein.
Might, let's get into it. Let's set the scene synopsis.
Yeah, so they free this Reddit character who's basically like a Saddam Hussein type character, like a Gaddafi. He's a crazy dictator. So he's been saved and
he's been captured.
Captured, right. Sorry, captured. the opposite of saved. And the Russia, in Russia, in Moscow,
3 weeks later,
the president of Russia and the president of the United States are giving a joint conference they're basically just being like patting themselves on the back for this successful arrest of this dictator. The Russian president says, you know, like, you know, glowing words and is like, oh, and our glorious friend, the American president.
We're hearing all this on the translator, my friend, the president of the United States.
Today, we're honoring this brave man. Ladies and gentlemen, my friend, the President of the United States of America.
And then the President of the United States, Harrison Ford, comes up, and he's going to... He's supposed to basically say the same thing, like, oh, that's great, let's eat, you know?
That's not the speech.
But he starts deviating from the speech, and he's like, you know what? I'm through with... It's kind of weird, but he's basically
He says, like, as I went through the refugee camps, I realized I don't deserve to be thanked.
He's basically like, I realize we need to bomb Kazakhstan to hell. Like, that's the only way to get out of this. Diplomacy doesn't work. Peace is for pussies. We need to, we can't negotiate. We got to blow shit up. And everyone's like, oh, kerfuffle, oh. And, you know, and it's the whole, like...
Well, they literally say, it's your turn to be afraid.
Yeah, he says, it's terrorists, it's your turn to be afraid.
Real peace is not just the absence of conflict, it's the presence of justice. And tonight I come to you with a pledge to change America's policy. Never again will I allow our political self-interest to deter us from doing what we know to be morally right. Atrocity and terror are not political weapons, and to those who would use them, your day is over. We will never negotiate. We will no longer tolerate, and we will no longer be afraid. It's your turn to be afraid.
And the sound of John McCain getting a boner in the distance is heard.
And in the drive back to the airport, his advisors and everyone's like, you didn't talk to anyone about this. You didn't inform our allies. This is a big fucking deal.
Yeah, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. So it's the right thing to do. I'm tough. I'm a cool guy.
Now, for God's sakes, put on the game.
Yeah, he's like, I want to watch the Notre Dame. I like that. I actually... It's a small thing. One of my favorite bits about the movie was the little back and forth about the Notre Dame game.
That was fun.
He like opens.
He's like, don't tell me the score. I want to watch the game.
It has a whole payoff. Like in a short amount of time, he's like, by the way, put the game on. And he's like, oh, it was a real squeaker. And he's like, shut up. I don't want to hear about the game. Just put it on.
And this kind of gets into what I was saying a minute ago, where it's like, I think him in the beginning of the movie, he's just had like apparently like a huge tour through refugee camps, this, that, and the other thing, speeches, like conferences. Like he's tired. It's like late.
I mean, he literally falls asleep.
Yeah, like he's like, I just want to watch the game and have a beer and maybe have sex with my wife.
He has a few beers. I was paying attention to that. Like he's had, I think by the time the action starts, he's like three or four drinks deep, which is
so. Yeah, so I credit that performance to that. Yeah, like, I don't think it's so much bubble core. I think he's tired. He's a few drinks in. You know, it's late.
Sure, whatever.
His cabinet is not on board with his whole, like, I can do whatever I want to do because I'm the president and I'm a good guy in this movie. Yeah.
I want to be the badass. Let me be the badass, guys. Come on.
Well, now it's public. Now it's policy. Get behind it.
The game is funny, though. And I like, it's also, so he's like, in this beginning part two is, you know, it's basically like I really like the first, like, I don't know, 40 minutes of
half
this
hour.
Movie.
Okay.
Half hour, 40 minutes. Like, it's the setup. It sets it up pretty well. Like, one of the things I'm clocking both for this movie and for Airpol in general is, like, how long does it take for us to get in the plane, right?
On the plane.
And I think this does a pretty good job. Like, I think it's honestly a sweet spot where I feel like you get enough to where there's, like, a meaty setup. And
about 20 minutes or so,
but you're on it soon. Like it's delaying the plane at all. Like you're on the plane pretty soon and you get a nice tour of the plane.
Cause
they're introducing,
I think that's important with an action movie like this in a closed environment. You need to establish
the environment.
the environment.
Yeah. Nakatomi Plaza, they do like the tour or whatever. And this is the same thing you're doing. The Gary Oldman characters who are the bad guys, but they're incognito as journalists. So the journalists are getting the tour of the plane. And obviously you as the audience are getting the tour of the plane.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah.
It's nice. And it's a good space. It's like, I don't know what Air Force One is actually like, but this is believable as what
and
it would be like.
It's a big ass plane.
Yeah. It's not the biggest plane, I would say, though. Like, I feel like it's actually a little smaller than I was expecting it to be.
Well, there's, like, a giant conference room. There's, like, a giant upper, like, command center area. There's the whole, like, basement.
I wouldn't say giant. I feel like these rooms are all, like, normal room sized. You get a conference room. I wouldn't say you get a giant conference room, you know?
Well, it's big enough. Like, one thing I noted watching this, so there are, I would say there's only between 8 and 10 terrorists. It's not like there's, like, a whole army of terrorists up there. So, and this might get into maybe your criticism of the movie, I think, but I think kind of the way the movie is structured, like, so the terrorists come on board. We find out that John Connor's foster dad, Todd, is a turncoat Secret Service agent. His name is Gibbs. And he's the one, he's the mole inside that allows the terrorists to take over the plane. He, like, shoots some Secret Service agents. He, like, puts a couple tear gas canisters or gas canisters inside and allows the terrorists to take control of the plane.
I have a question about this. What, and I'm not raising a criticism. In lawyer terms, this would be a question in aid of an objection. I'm not objecting, but I am raising this.
All right, Mike, approach the bench.
What is this guy's motivation?
All right, you're talking about Gary Oldman.
No, no, not Gary Oldman, the mole.
Oh, Todd.
Yeah, why is he doing this? I mean, because he does it even after the cause is lost, right? He's still going.
Well, there's a line he says at the end, so it's to skip to the very end, when they're trying to get off the plane because the plane's going to crash. He's like, I trusted you. And he's like, so will the next president. I'm just assuming, so is this guy just like, I've been a traitor for a while. I'll continue to be a traitor because I get money from bad guys.
It's like an anime thing. Like, I come from a long line of traitors. My father was a traitor before him. We have been traitors to the... There has always been a traitor Secret Service member since George Washington days.
Which makes me wonder, like, okay, so, like, clearly there haven't been previous attempts on presidents' lives, like hijackings, this, that, and the other thing. So what exactly has his capacity been as a traitor? Or is this his first time?
And, like, is he with the Kazakhstan people? Because he doesn't see... He seems as American as it gets. He has no trace of an accent. And, like, why would he care about...
I get the sense that it was just kind of a money thing, maybe? I don't know. It doesn't really specify.
If it's a money thing, like I kind of didn't understand why... Why when it all went to shit, right? When skipping to the head, you know, when Gary Oldman's off the plane, he's gotten off, he's departed. Why is this guy like? I was expecting him to like want to try and hide and be like, oh yeah, but then like something reveals himself where it's like, oh, well, I was the mole, but it's like he's still trying to somehow make this successful.
He doesn't try to sabotage them at any point.
He does. He shoots them.
He doesn't. So after Gary Oldman is off the plane and the terrorists are gone, he doesn't at that point doesn't try anything to kill anybody or do anything bad. It's only when he's in a position where we can only get one more person off the plane. That's when he's like, okay, well, I'm going to get out of here. Fuck the president.
So you think that was just I want to live.
It was just, I want to live.
All right. I'll go with that.
But you're right. It is a little like nebulous in terms of his motivations. And honestly, I think that this was kind of reworked because initially the idea was what was going to happen. He was going to reveal himself a lot sooner and join the terrorists.
Okay.
Like that's what was supposed to happen. But
that's kind of what I was expecting to happen. Like I was kind of surprised that he kept himself incognito so long, but it's not necessarily bad. I kind of see like why that would be strategically helpful, right? Like why give up that I'm on the inside?
Wolfgang Peterson, the director, was like, he thought it was more like that, give more tension to the audience, knowing that the audience knows this guy's a bad guy. And it amps up those moments where like at the end, when Harrison Ford gives him a gun, it's like, all right, buddy, here you go. Let's do this. And you're like, oh God, no, he's with them. You know, like it's for that purpose. It's for those purposes. And I get it. It works. But that, it does leave his motivations a little up in the air.
Yeah.
Again, I would assume he's getting paid. But anyway, Turncoat Secret Service Agent Gibbs is the reason that the terrorists are able to hijack the plane. He throws some gas canisters. They run in, get the guns. They take over the plane. And there's like a big shootout, and the music swells again. The Secret Service comes in. They're able to get Harrison Ford down to the escape pod, which, by the way, Air Force One, I guess, does not actually have an escape pod.
Yeah, I was a little surprised to see like an escape pod. I was expecting
like an actual, honest to God, when we say escape pod, we mean like Star Wars style escape pod.
Yeah, it's like what they land in on Tatooine.
Seriously. Yeah, Gary. One of Gary Oldman's terrorist buddies is like, "Sir, there's another one. Should we shoot it down?" "No, it must have short-circuited." Anyway, they think he escapes, and so they're like, "Well, fuck, we didn't get the president. I guess we'll just have to, like, you know, we got his family though. We'll start killing people off every half hour until they release General Raddick." And that's kind of the movie, and it becomes like a back and forth until they realize, "Oh, what's this, Harrison Ford?" President Jim Marshall did not get off the plane. He's still on the plane. He just watched Die Hard the night before. Well, I got policy like, changes in effect. I got to be a man of action.
This whole time I'm watching it, I was like, I was really in.
So when the reveal comes, when the thing lands, this is like, you know, the vice Glenn Close comes in and like this big entrance. He's the vice president. Like, how the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get
Air
Force
One? You're in the Situation Room with Al?
With Al from Quantum Leap. With Dean Al. Stockwell.
I did like a Leo gif when that happened.
Oh, yeah. The Secretary of Defense. And he plays like a prick.
You know what? We talked about my history with the movie, Dave. What is your history with the movie? And did you, did you know Al was in it?
I did. We'll get to that. I've seen this movie several times. This is a favorite of mine as a kid. But anyway, so shit's happening. People back in Washington are like, how'd they get a hold of Air Force One? We get the Situation Room scene in all these political thrillers. A bunch of people around a desk. What are we going to do? What are our options?
And I do like the vibe where everyone is kind of like, how did they get Air Force One? Like, yes. WTF, guys. Like,
well, and also, so before the reveal comes out that Harrison Ford is still on the plane, we get this big-ass action sequence. So the hijacking is happening. The pilots lock the door behind them, and they're like, no matter what happens, we are landing this plane.
This is my favorite, absolutely favorite part of the movie.
And this is like 30-ish movies, minutes into the movie.
Right, so the hijack is like, happened. I love the hijacking sequence, how it starts. You know, it's basically the mole shoots the Secret Service agents, and then that's the signal for the Gary Oldman crew to reveal themselves, and they just grab the guns and are like, all right, guys, it's happening. And so all this chaos is going on, but the people, the pilots, are still piloting the plane, and they're hearing all the gunshots, and they're like, all right, well, we're just going to land the plane right away.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of thinking like, well, how are they going to get out of this? Or how are they not going to get out of this? Or how is this just going to be they land the plane and that's it?
And to their credit, they do land the plane.
Yeah, and so this great sequence of like the plane is landing and everyone's coordinating the landing plane. Everyone knows what's going on ground, and I think they're in Germany. And you get this like this is where the sound design is at its peak, where like you get the plane is landing, but it's going really fast, and they're trying to like, we gotta stop it, you know. And then that's right when the terrorists do break in to the cockpit using like some
Some like plastic explosive on the door and blow it up.
And they just like coldly shoot one of the pilots and are like point a gun to the other pilot and like fly the plane up or we're gonna shoot you. And it's a good little bit where he's like, no, like he doesn't. And they shoot
both of them do. There's a moment where the guy like, no, and he like presses his flap, and Air Force One like goes on, it does this drastic turn, and it like goes on its side as it swerves. It's crazy.
Jesus.
It's really cool. Like I was on the edge of my seat for this part, you know. And it looks like it's going to land, but then just in time, it kind of does. It touches ground. But just in time, the terrorists get it. They pick it up and they like fly it back up. You get this great shot where it's like barely clearing like another plane on the runway.
Yeah, we get that a lot with like airport or airplane related action movies. There's always invariably a moment where like they're trying to lift off and there's something in front of them and we got to lift off right above the thing.
Yeah. And
we get a Spielberg shot here. Do you notice this?
What's the Spielberg? The people. Oh yeah, the people like looking at the plane as it's clear.
Yes,
people are like getting out of their cars to run to look at the plane. To all
get
meet at
right
the same
up to the
spot.
Camera and look.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's fun though. Like I like.
Yeah.
this, for me, this is where the, so once the plane like comes up and we hit cruising altitude, this is where I start to like, I can't, there's a gap here of like an hour where I was just not feeling it. And then, once we get to the end, I was kind of back in.
Well, this is when the movie kind of like, you know, sets into, I don't want to, not cruise control, but like, this is what the movie is for the next hour.
Yeah.
Like, basically.
And I feel like my big, we can get into it, but like my general big criticism is I feel like the next hour and change or whatever of this movie, or hour give and take, maybe less than hour, is kind of the same scene again and again.
I don't know. So I was clocking this because I was aware of your concerns, Michael. And I was clocking these things. So I was clocking when the takeover of the plane happens. It's like 20 to 30 minutes in. They established, they have firm control of the plane, like about half hour ish in.
I love you're analyzing this like you're like one of the like White House like,
I am.
You're in the situation.
I'm looking at our options so I can get you to reverse your rating. And then for the next hour, this is when it becomes like a chess match. Like it's kind of a stalemate, really.
I think the next hour is when it's really becomes Die Hard in a plane.
Yes, it's a stalemate. Like, this is the reveal. So after the whole craziness at the German airport happens, airbase, whatever, it's revealed that the escape pod is empty. Oh, my God, where's the president? And then it cuts back to Air Force One. And he kind of comes out of, like, a hole or something.
And the whole thing is, like, he's like, I'm not abandoning my family. Like, I can't leave it. Yeah, it's very Fast and Furious.
And I'm going to circle back to that question you asked earlier, Mike, about my background with this movie, my first time. So this is kind of the moment where I'm like, Harrison Ford is like a goddamn movie star. And to answer your question, this moment when he gets out and he's kind of looking around and like his demeanor is like, you realize he's a man of action given his policy changes. It's revealed a little in like a scene or two later from an army guy that like, hey, let's not write him off. He's like a Medal of Honor guy. He flew a bunch of combat missions in Vietnam. He's a warrior.
Yeah, they do drop. He was like, I mean, this is quite different than certain other people. He was in war. He fought in combat.
He was in Vietnam.
He's a military veteran. Character. Yeah, weird. We don't have a lot of presidents who actually did that.
But it's like, it's the moment when he gets out. So we get that background with him. We know he's capable. But I like that Harrison Ford plays it in such a way where like he hasn't seen combat in like almost 30 years.
Yeah, he's like a Vietnam War vet, which was
exactly
a while
and he's in
before
his 50s,
97.
And like that moment when he gets off, when he gets out of that hole on top of the escape pod like mechanism, whatever. He looks a little unsure of himself. He's kind of out of his element. He's not behaving in such. He's not John McClane right away.
He doesn't have a weapon. You know,
he doesn't have a weapon, and he's scared. And I think Harrison Ford plays it well in these moments. And even when he has the gun later, like when he kills the first terrorist, the movie takes a beat for him to be like, oh shit, you know what I mean? I just like shot this guy dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely has like I was kind of thinking of it as like, we're back, baby.
Well, and so to circle back to your question, like when he gets out and he's still there and the music swells, like I, as a kid and still largely, you know, politics aside, I fucking love this movie as a kid.
I think one can enjoy this movie without, you know, thinking about the political implications of the movie for sure. You
yeah,
know.
Yeah. Because it's technically so well made, and again, as you said earlier, it is very over the top. Like this is, you know, it's a little hard to take this movie seriously at times, especially given Gary Oldman's performance. I wrote a note down,
but
it should
be fair. That is there. Like this movie might have played a little better with this current time that I happen to be watching it, you know, we don't have to go into details, but like not the best time for this kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
That affect things.
But like I had a note in here where it's like, I don't think there's any scenery left to chew on in this movie because Gary Oldman has devoured it all.
Oh.
No, and I say that in a good way.
I kind of don't love him in this movie, and maybe we'll get into some other movies, or maybe our next movie we talk about. I saw this after Con Air, and I was kind of...
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did Mike get an advanced screening, an advanced schedule of our Airpool movies?
I kind of was thinking he's just sort of boring, you know, ex-Soviet Union generic bad guy.
I will say his motivation is very like...
I wanted him to chew more scenery. I was hungry to see that scenery get chewed.
I mean, I will say he is certainly menacing. Like in these scenes, and so this in this middle hour of the movie, it becomes a, like a diehard kind of stalemate option. Like Harrison Ford is in the lower level with like aeronautics and all that stuff. And he's kind of like, he's causing problems for Gary Oldman up top. And as I mentioned before...
He's like in the... Harrison Ford is basically for like a lot of this movie, and or certainly this chunk of the movie is in like the service area of the airport. Yeah.
The baggage claim.
Yeah, he's
with
the bags and the food and everything.
There's no one down there.
Yeah.
And it becomes a thing, as I mentioned earlier, there's only maybe like eight or so terrorists on the plane. So Gary Oldman can't necessarily just send all his guys down there because he doesn't want them all to get shot. He doesn't have many guys. So if you can't just say like, why doesn't he just go down there and shoot them? It's like, well, there's not that many of them, and they have a whole plane to control. So it kind of comes this.
And
like,
it takes them a long time to realize that the president is down there.
They think it's a Secret Service agent.
Because the people, I think we need to be clear, the people on the ground, like the people in the Situation Room, know the president is not in the escape pod. But for most of the movie, everyone on the plane thinks the president was on the escape pod.
Yeah. And then we get this great scene, again, if we're talking like 90s tropes, he goes through the baggage and he finds a phone. And it's so great because this is a time when he has to pull out a manual in order to activate the phone. He's like, how does this thing work?
Dang cell phone.
And he calls the White House switchboard. And it's a fun moment where he's like, ah, shit, what the hell's the number? And we get this fun. And again, this is kind of a fun thing that I don't know if we see too often anymore, like talking to like operators like this where he's like, trace the damn call. Yeah. Okay, sir.
White House switchboard, how may I direct your call?
All right, listen. Listen carefully. This is an emergency call from Air Force One. This is the president. Connect me to the vice president, please.
Who did you say is calling?
This is the president.
Yeah, right, and I'm the first lady.
Don't cut me off. This is an emergency.
Sir, the president doesn't call this particular phone number, so whoever you are,
trace the call. Follow your standard security procedure. And trace the goddamn call.
Okay, sir. You want to make a federal case out of this? Find my niece.
Yeah, it's like the classic thing of like, it's the president, like, uh-huh, and yes. I'm the Queen of England, you know, or whatever. Like, she clearly does not believe, you know, he's the president. He's like, God damn it,
and then it's
president.
Funny, too, because, like, she is convinced when she hears the Russian guy who comes downstairs, the guy from Lost, the eye patch guy, the Terminator guy from Lost, he comes down. He's like, he says something like, Davai! And it's like, oh, that guy's speaking Russian. Oh, my God, it is the president.
Don't move.
I traced the call, sir.
Give me the gun.
Are you there?
Very slowly.
Oh, my God.
Davai!
I'll put you right through, Mr. President.
He must be the president. There's someone speaking Russian?
Yes! That was kind of the thought I had. It's like, clearly there's some sort of, it's like there's a gun or something like that. Drop the gun. Like, oh, right away, Mr. President. You know? And he kind of like slyly slides the phone into like his jacket pocket. The terrorist doesn't see it. And, you know, it's this big action. Where the hell was I going at before? Oh, yeah. So as I was getting at before, the whole middle chunk of this movie is just kind of like, you know, like a Mexican standoff. You're up there, I'm down here. He causes problems for them up there by like cutting the fuel. He manages to like kill a guy, and like eventually he gets some hostage. He gets the hostages out of there. He does all this while the distraction happens.
This is a good thing where it's basically like, I'm gonna eject. He finds a way to like get the plane to just dump a bunch of fuel, so they have to refuel. And they negotiate with the Americans, like on the Situation Room, like, hey, you're going to send a refueling plane to help us. And they're like, okay, we'll do that. But to refuel, you have to go down to 15,000 feet, which is not true.
This is after
it's just a way to get low enough so the hostages can parachute out of the plane.
Yeah. And this is all done by aside from Harrison Ford, my favorite character in the movie, Fax Lady.
She is the most like audience insert character, I think, where it's like, yes, there's the whole hostage situation happening and they're like, how can we like tell the people in the Situation Room that we need to get down to 15,000 feet so we
this
can jump.
This is after Harrison Ford manages to get into where the hostages are being held.
Right. And the, so everyone's like, oh, we're screwed. Like, we can't, they cut all the
they
lines.
They jammed the frequencies.
Like, and she's like, Mr. President, we could send a fax.
Mr. President? Sir? The fax machines.
Told you the phone lines are out.
No. Voice lines and faxes are on two different systems of encryption. If you disable one, it'd be very easy to overlook the other.
This works. You get to be Postmaster General. Come with me. These people are ready to go.
Very, very 97 that, like, a fax system saves the day.
Yes, and the Situation Room manages to get it. They drop to 15,000 feet, and they're able to do all this because there's the distraction of the fuel plane.
It takes them a while, though. I like the this felt Spielberg-y to me too. You get the great shots where, like, they send the fax, and you see the Situation Room, all the chaos is going on, and you see just like the fax.
No one sees it.
Comes out, and like, yes. No one is paying attention to the fax machine, and yes. It's kind of framed in a really nice way where the fax machine is like in the foreground of the image, and the background is just the chaos of all the people running around.
Yeah.
So I mean, they see it eventually, but that's a good moment.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, like, to get back to Gary Oldman, what you're saying, like, most of the middle chunk of this movie is Gary Oldman just killing hostages one after another.
Yeah.
And they're really tense scenes. Like,
do we say what Gary Oldman's demand was? Like, why he's doing this?
He wants General Raddick released, and I guess the idea is when Raddick is released, he'll just immediately gain power again?
He wants to see the Soviet Union reborn and back to its former glory.
And it's like, how? Like there's the suggestion is, like, there are forces around the area that are still loyal to Raddick. You're not exactly sure how many, though.
I get the feeling, he doesn't say this, but I get the feeling, like, they would have released Raddick. Like, in his mind, if everything went according to plan, they would have released Raddick, and he would have still killed, he would have killed the president.
Oh, definitely. He might maybe even crash the plane. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't think there's, like, a world in which Gary Oldman does not... according to his plan, I think the president dies, no matter what.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's like, yeah. So he wants to bring back the former glory of the Soviet Union, and Raddick is the way. He's like a former Afghan soldier, I think, or something like that, or he fought in like the Afghan conflict. I think they say. Again, yeah, like Gibbs, it's sometimes like the motivations are a little like. What does he plan to get?
The Soviet Union's Vietnam. You know, he's just like. It's mirroring the president's experience. You know, the president of America fought in Vietnam. This guy fought in the Soviet Afghanistan war, you know? Mm. It's like poetry. It rhymes.
But to go even further back, that moment when he gets off the escape pod mechanism that shoots me back to being a kid. And I love this movie as a kid, to answer your question. I watched it a lot.
Yeah. Did you see this in theaters?
I don't think I saw it in theaters. This was one I saw on video. I would have been like 11 years old or so when
this
came out.
It feels like such a video store movie. Like, this is a movie I talked about seeing it on TV, but I feel like I always saw this on video rental stores.
And I think a big part of that, like, to get back to what I was saying, is Harrison Ford. Like, I think probably in my kid mind, this was very, like, Indiana Jones adjacent. He's still kicking ass. He's older, but he's still got it. He's shooting people. He's fighting. You get that great sequence when the fuel plane explodes, and he's like... dangling off like the hatch, or like as like the flames are like falling down, like, falling to the ground behind him.
I like really want it to be that, Dave. I do, but I don't like. I think I fall on the air, the meter of just disliking his performance. Like, I think
really
there's too much like.
I am going nuts right now. Again, he's three beers in. He's had a long fucking night. He's probably been up for like almost a day at this point.
You think that's like an intentional choice to play the whole movie a little bit? Like,
it's not the whole movie. It's like the first chunk when he's tired. Sleeping. He's not expecting the plane to get hijacked.
I think there's too much of this movie is him just kind of being like. All right, we're going to get off.
Are crazy. That only happens in the beginning of the movie when he's visibly having beers.
I'm going to put all my cards on the table, Dave. When I watch this movie, I may have been sick. Who's to say that somehow affected my thoughts, right? There's no possible world in which I was sick and a little grumpy and then just didn't have a good time.
Almost as if time was distorted for you. You were experiencing time differently than normal people.
Hopped up on the Wasteland cough medicine, the Bartertown Dayquil.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm willing to admit that may have affected things. Maybe I was the Air Force One, more like Air Force 2 stars out of 5.
I think you're Gibbs. You're the bull. Because I'm like, because again, this is only 2 hours. Like the movie is over within two hours. Yeah. And like, if we're talking plot structure, like it is literally like a perfect action movie plot structure. 30 minutes in at the end of act one, then you get an hour, which is act two. And then act three starts after Gary Oldman is killed. You know, you get the perfect get off my plane, which I'm sure you've heard this line before you saw the movie, right, Michael?
Get off my plane.
Yeah, I've seen that line, and like I knew that line.
It's one of my best lines. And I didn't mumble it. I said it clearly and with authority.
Get off my plane.
I imagine as he said that, you're just like...
No, I like again. This is kind of that kind of kicks off the third act or whatever you want to call it.
When you wake up,
it's when I was more interested. I like the bookends of this movie. I liked quite a bit. It was the middle chunk that I just thought I do still kind of, I mean, again, I maybe I'd feel differently, but I was not falling asleep or anything like that. I felt
so
like
what you're saying is your 2 stars has an asterisk next to it.
You know, am I willing? we'll talk about what my rating is at the end of this. But I do think that that second chunk of this movie, I was trying to think like why it didn't work for me as well. And this is my review that I posted where you were like, the plane was too far off the ground. That is not what I was trying to say. I was thinking
about... The plane was too distant from the ground throughout the movie.
That's not what I meant. Maybe I did a poor job getting across what I meant. But I was thinking about movies like Speed or Die Hard, which I love. And also movies I saw as an adult. Like, I have no nostalgia for those movies, and I love them. And I was thinking like, okay, well, Die Hard... They're in that second act, you're exploring Nakatomi Plaza, which is a big ass building. You get all these variety of sets and stuff.
It's very similar to this movie. He causes problems for the people above.
Yeah. It's the same beats, but it's like, yeah. I like that you're exploring all of Nakatomi Plaza and there's so much variety in the way you can do action sequence there.
He's also, well, and much like this movie in that he's communicating with Al,
right,
the cop,
right,
outside,
with the guy on the
and
ground.
This, he's communicating with Glenn Close in the situation room.
Yeah. Then I was also thinking of Speed, which is sort of the opposite of that, where it's like the squashed and most squashed environment possible. It's just a bus.
Yeah, it's cramped.
And Speed does a lot of cool stuff where it's like you're cramped in the bus, but then you're also just getting all the physicality of the bus careening through. It's kind of like the shots you get of this movie where the plane is landing and then takes off again, which is one of my favorite sequences. But for this middle chunk, you're missing... for the most part, you get some of that with like the fighter jets kind of trying to intercept and do things. But for the most part, you're missing that like physicality of what's going on in the plane. Like you're just on a plane. Like there's nothing really, they're not like flying through like in Speed. There's, you know, she's about to hit a woman. Like there's like a old woman with a stroller, you know, she runs over. You don't get any of that kind of stuff. But the inside stuff is not big enough to get the variety of the Nakatomi Plaza. So you're kind of in the same space for most of the movie. And I feel...
The middle act, it kind of becomes... It's more like... There's not a lot of variety. I grant that. It kind of is just more of like killing hostages one by one and like... And Harrison Ford trying to figure out ways to land the plane. He does the thing with the fuel. I think you could contest that the fuel plane sequence is pretty cool.
Like when they're trying to refuel.
Yeah, something happens and it blows up. I mean, it's a gigantic explosion.
I liked when it blowed up. And
I think it's more of like a just kind of a chess match, like a Mexican standoff.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm willing to admit, maybe if I was not sick, this would be more exciting to me. But this is where I was like, I was getting like the Tom Clancy vibes, parentheses negative, okay. Where it's just like, it's like intrigue that I'm not interested in, I guess, is maybe the best way to put it. But yeah, I mean, and talking about this movie, you're right. I mean, it has a lot going for it. I'm willing to maybe concede.
Here's the pen again. You're willing to sign the affidavit that you give it at least.
I'm not willing
stars?
To sign. No, I didn't say that, Dave. I didn't say that. We're talking a half star bump here.
Oh, so 2.5. Willing to go to 2.5.
I think so. Which is right down the middle.
All right, hold on. Chad, get the Attorney General in here. Get me a copy of the Pacus Fido Constitution. Does 2.5 count as a favorable rating? All right, well, we're looking into that, but
I think it gives me the flexibility to I could say 2.5 because it's right down the middle. I think I could say 2.5, and I don't recommend it, or I do recommend it. I think it gives me the flexibility to decide one way or the other.
Okay, I can't wait for the end of the episode. Anyway, one thing we didn't talk about are like kind of the secondary characters in this movie, like Glenn Coase, for instance. Like, she gets an entrance. She gets that awesome, like, you know, the cameras behind these Secret Service agents as they're running out of the White House. A chopper is landing in the White House lawn, and Glenn Coase gets out, and she is the vice president, baby.
Yeah, she's fun.
Has this pissing match with Dean Stockwell, the defense secretary.
I might as well just get my negative stuff out of the way. I didn't like any of this stuff. I thought
like
this
the
was,
subplot where yes, it's like I'm in like, charge. Ditch no, this. I'm in charge.
Ditch this. This went on. They went too far in the rabbit hole of this, where they were like, "All right, get the copy of the Constitution. Let's see." And they're like, "Let's get this guy on the phone." I'm like, "I don't care. I know Harrison Ford's going to make it out of this."
The problem with this is it doesn't become a big enough like source of contention. Like
the thing is, the whole time it's going on, I know it doesn't matter. I know that this is not going to matter at all.
They play it up as if it is going to matter. Like being in Philip Baker Hall, like a Paul Thomas Anderson regular, you know, the library cop from Seinfeld, they bring him in, which I guess he's the attorney general. Like, okay, what does the Constitution say? Like, is the president incapacitated? Blah, blah, blah. And it's leading to a moment where it's like, okay, obviously, Dean Stockwell wants to do like a brash course of action. It sounds like he almost wants to shoot the plane down, but nothing ever really comes of that because once Harrison Ford is established as being alive, this whole plot point, they bring it up once or twice, but it doesn't really come to anything. There's no moment where it's like Dean Stockwell's like, all right, I'm taking over. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like at this point on, they're kind of on the same page. So it doesn't really matter. And I wonder if this was dropped from the movie, which would maybe drop the runtime down, maybe shave at least 5 or 10 minutes off the movie, if you would be a little more favorable to it with that off.
I have to imagine that it couldn't hurt. I think I would. I mean, I
would get to things sooner for sure.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the second act. Like, that's that second act that I like kind of have problems with. Cause like I said, I mean, I was fully on board with this movie for the first like 40 minutes or so. It was really like, and then again, at the end, I was kind of on board again.
And they get attacked by fighters. There's like an airborne attack.
Yeah.
By MiGs. I mean, granted, this was funny. I thought this was funny because once the good guys and the F-15s come or whatever, it's almost it's like no contest. They immediately clear the MiGs, and it's just like there's not a ton of tension. It's like you know what I mean? It seems like the MiGs are like TIE fighters. Like, they are immediately shot down.
TIE fighters is a funny way to put it.
And there is a funny moment when like they shoot a missile at Air Force One. They do fuck up Air Force One. They shoot it up before the F-15s arrive. They shoot a missile at it, and one guy takes a missile, aka takes a bullet for the president by flying his F-15 directly into the path of the missile. He's like, no!
This way, Air Force One, break left and climb!
Sir, we've lost countermeasures.
This is Halo 2, they've lost countermeasures. I'm going in.
Goose down! Halo 2 is
The idea of taking a bullet for the president in fighter jet form is very funny.
I admit I laughed at this part because it was ridiculous. Because the way it's shot, the way that it's depicted is the plane very slowly going into the path of the missile.
It is like it's the slowest missile that has ever been shot.
Essentially, and we actually get this tropey thing later when the guy like slow motion jumps in front of the president. No, we get it here in the jet. No. And I honestly couldn't help but laugh. Again, it gets into like the over-the-top nature of this movie. It's a little cartoony at times.
I think, again, that's when it's at its best, you know? I think the movie is at its best when it's a guy screaming no to take a bullet for the president in the form of a missile hitting his fighter jet.
Yeah.
And at its worst when it's like trying to do serious Tom Clancy political intrigue.
Yeah, I agree. Well, so we talked about Gary Oldman. We hinted on, I think Glenn Close is fun. I mean, she doesn't have a huge role. Well, that's a fairly sizable role. Like she's kind of the one talking to Gary Oldman before Harrison Ford comes back. Like, you know, you got to give us more time, you know, that kind of thing. There's a lot of tropey scenes in this movie. And one thing we didn't mention, like Harrison Ford's family in this movie, like the mom, I think we've seen her before, haven't we? She was in Bicentennial Man.
Oh God.
She was like the mom in Bicentennial Man who didn't like the robot.
I don't think I was on that episode. And she's I did see that movie back in the day.
We haven't covered this, but she's also the mom in the Santa Claus.
Huh. She had a bit of a Catherine O'Hara vibe. Like kind of reminded me of Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, interesting.
So wasn't
and
her.
Then also there's the daughter who was in a movie I haven't seen, but I vaguely remember. It was actually Alfonso Cuarón's first American film. Liesl Matthews. She plays Alice Marshall. She was in a movie called The Little.
Remember when the president was like not so old that like the president was young enough they could have a daughter? Like
yeah, I know. It wasn't like 80 years old.
Wasn't like, this is my great-granddaughter.
This character is played by Liesl Matthews. She was in a movie called The Little Princess that I haven't seen, but I vaguely... Hold on. I'm being handed something here. Oh my God, this is... Okay, this is big news. I just got a form here. I got a fax. I have Ryan's thoughts on the movie.
Oh my God.
Oh, there's an attachment here. It's a fax. I don't know how there's an attachment, but... Here, hold on. Let me play this.
My fellow apocalypse videoans, I'm sorry I cannot be there on the record today, but I want to leave you with some words of things you have to hit on the podcast in my absence. First of all, the score of Air Force One has been used in a lot of shit. What did Harrison Ford say in that speech? Because I don't understand it. Glenn Close's entrance is pretty damn great. The little princess that plays the first daughter from The Little Princess. Google her. Google the Pritzker family. Pritzker family. Google that and talk about it on the show. That co-pilot that's flying Air Force One should be put up against a wall for treason. I think the military would have disabled that plane while it was on the ground. The bullet hole effects in the movie are really good, especially when that guy is shooting at the bathrooms. That whiteboard switch lady that wouldn't put President Harrison Ford through to the vice president should be put up against a wall for treason. That guy from Lost with the eye patch. A lot of good Indiana Jones punches in this film. When old President Harrison Ford enters that meeting room for the first time with all the hostages on the plane, I thought to myself, my God, everyone is so ugly except for Harrison. And I saluted the screen. God bless you, Mr. President. And then finally, when the little princess is on the little rope getting taken off the plane and she yells, hi, Dad, as she flies away and the Goldsmith score swells, I cry, and it's so good, and I salute this movie, and anybody that doesn't should be put up against a wall. That is all. Good day.
Can't help but feel some of this is directed at me, but... Yeah, the Pritzker family, I was like, surely this is not billionaire J.B. Pritzker, but yes, it is. They're just like a billionaire family. Must be nice. I don't know.
What? So apparently, yeah, I just got this in. Yeah, the Pritzker family, a key to the... So apparently they control the TransUnion Credit Bureau, Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines, and Hyatt, the hotel chain. they are so rich, they have been on the list of America's richest families since the list began in 1982. And she, and this actress who plays the daughter, she is literally a billionaire. Because I guess at some point they divvied up like the family fortune, and like this whole family is like the whole family are billionaires. They're all
what a coincidence that she's in this family and also such a great actress that she was able to get this role
in 19.
I'm sure it had nothing to do. One had nothing to do with the other.
I mean, apparently a lot of the Pritzkers are involved in philanthropic causes. They split the family up. I'm just kind of looking over this here.
I mean, J.B. Pritzker is certainly the most prominent one in the 2020s anyway. Like, he's the governor of Illinois right now.
Yeah.
He's quite vocal. He's a Democrat, very vocal opponent of the other side. But yeah.
So it seems like a lot of these Pritzkers are involved in like philanthropic, you know, things.
Well, they better be at the least. I hope so. That's the least they could do. If they're not just going to give it away, at least spend it on something worthwhile, I suppose.
I mean, my first instinct when I hear about billionaires is like, fuck those people, you know?
Yeah, of course they're involved in philanthropic endeavors. Like, it's pretty freaking easy.
A lot of James Bond villains are also involved in philanthropic efforts.
Yeah, 100%. Like, when you have $1 billion, it's pretty easy to give ungodly amounts of money away, mm-hmm. and you won't notice it.
But apparently she's kind of involved in more of the philanthropic things. She doesn't really act... but as far as this movie goes, I mean, she's fine. I mean, as Ryan said in his
I didn't think, what is this billionaire doing in this movie? This is an abomination. you know, she can't act or anything like I did watching Marty Supreme with that one guy.
You're talking about the what's-his-face.
Yeah, I was like, this guy can't act. Why is he in this? She acted fine.
Yeah, she was fine. As Ryan said, he teared up, but she's like, "Hey, Dad!" You know,
I am surprised that anyone would tear up at this movie, and I'm not. It's just so silly. Like, I don't.
Well, I'm wondering. So, I know what your state of mind was watching this movie. You were sick. You were on NyQuil. For all we know, maybe Ryan watched this stoned. I don't know.
Please, Dave. It was DayQuil. I was not
DayQuil.
For the record, I was not sleepy during this movie. I didn't fall asleep.
But you said you were grumpy.
I was grumpy. I'm willing to concede to a level of grumpiness, Your Honor. There was a measurable amount of grumpy.
But, we get a cool third act. Some MiGs come. There's this, like, airborne sequence, aerial fight sequence, which is fun. The plane gets shot up. And then we get into the rescue scene when they divert, like, a big plane over to them, like a military plane. They like throw a line out, they attach it, and then it's going to be a thing where it's like, we're going to slide some people from our plane over to yours with like some harnesses, and then like as your plane, the engines are dying, like it's we're going lower and lower, we'll go below you, and like everyone will just sort of, you know, go down the line and we'll rescue you.
And they're over the water because it's 1997 and CG can only do so much.
Exactly. And we get what is perhaps... So if we're talking about the things that are most remembered from this movie, I think number one is "Get off my plane." I think everyone can.
That's number one with a bullet.
Number one with a bullet. Number two is the appearance of what is perhaps it is among the worst bits of CGI ever seen in a film. It's up there with the Scorpion King in The Mummy Returns.
I totally disagree.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
The plane crashing?
The plane crashing and like, bending and the guy on board like, no!
I don't think it's that bad. And I think a lot of this is due to the sound design. I think the sound design...
Well, the sound design is picking up a lot of the weight, but like this looks like a cutscene from a PlayStation 1 video game.
PlayStation 2. PlayStation 2 okay. video game. I don't think this is that... It is... Does it look dated? Yes. I don't think this is Scorpion King level bad. Maybe because it is like... I think they knew a little bit their limitations. Like, it's just a plane and water. Yeah. Like, it's a flat surface without a lot going on. But yeah, it doesn't look great.
It's also like, unlike, I think a lot of the other plane scenes, like the CGI is fine because it's at night. It's dark. It kind of obscures things a bit. But this is like in the morning. There's like kind of a pink sunset behind or sunrise behind them. So it adds a bit more day.
Titanic knew to set it at night when the Titanic sank, I guess. But like that did help. Like, imagine if the Titanic sinking sequence was in daytime, it would have looked maybe like.
Well,
this.
If we're talking effects at the time, like the daytime Titanic scenes, I think hold up fairly well, especially like those sunset scenes, you know. They hold up pretty well.
There's a few wonky shots in it, though, I'd say.
Like, it's CG, but this just screams like we're not quite there yet, you know?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that lets it down is the splash. Like the splash, yes. Like the plane land, it's this giant plane, and when it lands, it's like they dropped like a toy plane in the water. Like it just does not
look good.
Even if some like a Neil deGrasse Tyson is like, actually, that's how much it would splash. Like, I don't care. I want to see like big frothing water spraying the camera, you know?
It makes me kind of wish that they had, instead of doing CG, if they had done like, you know, miniatures or something. You know what I mean? I feel like it would have looked better. Like this is a time where like CG can do anything. It's not in all movies yet. It's not going to be in the entire movie, but we're going to use it for the big show-stopping sequences. And just unfortunately, not all of them hit. Like Jurassic Park was like second out the gate behind T2, and it works. They knew to obscure
Jurassic Park. This, I mean, as much as T2 holds up today, Jurassic Park is in a league of its own. Jurassic Park is like dark arts wizardry. Absolutely. You know? What was the?
Well,
there
because,
was a movie
because
I was
it's
seeing.
A blend of practical, the animatronic puppets, and the CG.
You know what I saw recently in theaters that I was like, God damn, this is maybe up there with Jurassic Park as far as like effects that are holding up exceptionally well in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. That's another one that I put in Jurassic Park where I'm like, this is. I mean, maybe the dark arc wizardry is that just really talented people working very hard for a long time.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, they blend it. They don't go all in on CG. They blend it with practical stuff, miniatures, people in costumes, you know, makeup. And I think like this would have been a good opportunity to blend the CG with some practical stuff. Maybe use some miniatures and blend it with some CG to kind of sell it. But they go all in on the CG in the scene and it just does not hold up. You get that really bad moment where, like, the camera zooms in on the guy as he's, like, on his knees with the door open. You know? Just, like, it's so bad. And what's even funnier, it makes it unintentionally hilarious. As the plane hits the water, you still hear him going,
Yeah, I actually kind of like that because you want the satisfaction of your turncoat mole Secret Service agent dying.
Yeah, granted. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
Yeah, and there's then, no way you would hear this man scream over the din of a jumbo jet crashing into the water.
And it's an exciting sequence because, like, oh, we didn't mention William H. Macy is in this movie. He's just like an army advisor guy, and he gets shot by turncoat Secret Service guy. And we get an exciting moment where Harrison Ford is the last one out of the plane, and he's not properly, like, you know, in the harness or whatever. He's, like, dangling. He's, like, flying and stuff. And we get Harrison Ford dangling in front of, like,
Basically, like, holding on, flying behind the plane as it's flying away. Like, yeah, it is very Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they basically have to reel him in and... Oh, you know, our plane has now become Air Force One. Yay!
Can you imagine the approval ratings of this president after this incident?
Oh, dude.
His re-election campaign would just be video footage of him, like, hanging on the plane.
This brings up an interesting question. So as this daring mid-air rescue is occurring, we cut to the press room of the White House. As they are apparently listening to a live feed of the rescue attempt, I'm like, excuse me, what? Why would they be listening to this? Why would they have access? Am I alone here? They absolutely would not be able to hear that.
No, this would be like classified to hell.
Classified. And then they come out and say, we did it, people. Yay. Yeah. You know what I mean? It wouldn't.
Yeah. It's like doing like a live feed of like the raid on Osama bin Laden's.
Exactly. They just would not. Again, it gets into the cartoonish nature.
You have John Cena announce it on SmackDown or whatever that it's happened after the fact, just like all major
or Fortnite, you know, as normal people do it. But anyway, they rescue him. He gets on the plane, and I kind of like that this movie, like, it just kind of ends. Like, he gets on the plane. There's nothing left to do. We get some celebrations. You get the you didn't mention there's a candlelight vigil outside the White House, or people as people are biting their nails. Oh, is the president going to survive?
Yeah,
and just like, and again, there, and it comes back to this moment worthlessly, where Glenn Close looks at this like this list of signatures. It's a list of signatures that's been established. If we can sign this paper, if we get enough signatures, we can declare that the president is incapacitated, essentially, and then I guess Dean Stockwell becomes in charge. Again, it's like it's played as this big moment, but there wasn't a moment prior to that where it's like, oh, Dean Stockwell's going to take control and we got to stop him.
Yeah,
it's just worthless. It does not need to be here.
Yeah.
But it's played as this big triumphant moment where she just like rips it up or something.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. She rips it up and then puts it in like the manila envelope.
Yeah, she like scribbles "fuck you, Dean," like, you know, with her pen, and then rips it up and closes it. And then she just kind of smiles and, you know. But anyway, the movie just kind of ends, and it's like, yeah, there's nothing else.
The movie does just end.
It's like, yeah, we're now Air Force One. Yay! Da 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 da. You know, end of movie.
That's all, folks.
Exactly. And then Mike kind of harumphs, like, well, that last part was
Yeah, then
fun,
I fold my arms and I harumph. I need to watch a French New Wave film to feel better.
I thought we were going to watch the French version of The Birdcage, Dave. You
know, there's a version of this Air Force One, which is a French original, which is much better, much better.
But that's Air Force One. I'm hooting and hollering again. Like, it's a fun time at the movies. I will say, however, you know, I'm not going to give it 5 stars. I'm going to give it 4 stars and a heart. I think it's a very fun movie. It holds up. Technically speaking, aside from some spotty CGI, it's still a romp. Bad politics aside, I can enjoy this as like a political action thriller. I think it holds up in that sense. Politics, it definitely does not hold up. And I honestly cringed at the beginning of this movie, like, oh, Jesus.
You kind of have to just like, I don't know, ignore it or like, it's not the movie's fault. Well, it is the movie's fault, but it's not the movie's fault that like, this is a particularly bad time to watch it. But I don't know, is there ever a good time? Like, if I were watching this in 2003, I'd be just as pissed off as I am now at the politics. I don't know.
I remember, like, if we're talking about like my history of this movie, this was a movie I rented a lot as a kid, and I remember after September 11th happened, they were putting, at least in the Albertsons that we often rented movies from, I've talked about it on the show before, like, back in the day, my parents used to rent movies from the local Albertsons because they had a small video selection. After September 11th, they had to put stickers on all of their movies that had sensitive material in it related to hijackings or terrorists or airplane things, you know what I mean? And I forget what the sticker said, but it was something along the lines of like, hey, warning, this has like scary airplane shit in it, you know what I mean? And I remember at the time thinking like, wow, everything's changed, you know? Like, this, the world is fucking different.
It is funny, like, I feel like the security to get on Air Force One is depicted in this movie is less than the security to get on a normal plane post 9/11.
But hey, we've already checked at the gate. This has Harrison Ford on the plane, sir. Okay, of course. I beg your pardon.
Okay, you can do a fingerprint scan then.
Yeah. They do say that. Like,
we won't do a pat down or anything, you know.
Yeah. Well, they don't go on board with any guns.
They don't.
It's all turncoat Secret Service.
That is true. Like, they could have theoretically gotten away with this post 9/11, probably still.
They make a big point of saying, like, it's impossible to get guns on Air Force One. And then Glenn Close is like, well, there are already enough guns on board to take over a small country or something.
Right, right. Yeah.
Anyway. But again, I don't mind those bits of stupidity. This is a goof. I think at its heart, this is a goofy, over-the-top thriller.
So yeah.
It's not really concerned with the reality of those things. But I definitely would recommend this movie. 4 stars and a heart on Letterboxd, folks. It holds up. It's still a fun time at the movies. I'm almost inclined to give it 4.5 just based on the technical sound merits alone. If it were not for Titanic that year, I would have given this movie Best Sound Oscar. Like, it really stood out, like, watching it. Like, this
it's tough going against Titanic.
If you can watch this movie on a sound system, you're not getting the same experience with, like, your basic.
This is
MTV
like
speakers.
I'm going to put this up there in a short list, I think, of, like, movies like Twister, where it's like, not only watch this on a sound system, but, like, if you've just gotten a sound system and you want to have fun with it, or if you want an excuse to get a sound system, like, yes. this is one of the movies that, like, is worth it for that. And it's just so well done. Yeah. This is definitely
one of those demo discs, you know?
Yes. Demo disc level sound.
They'd be spinning this at Best Buy.
You know what? I'm going to say I recommend this if you have a nice sound system. That I think that's my caveat is if you have a nice sound system, I would give this a recommendation.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be enough to push this over the line. Just because I'm talking about like the movie in general. You know, there's stuff I like, there's stuff I don't like. I got to be true to myself. Like, a lot of this movie didn't work for me, and I can't give into peer pressure. I can't cave into what my advisors want. I have to be honest to myself that there were parts of this movie that just did not work. The Glenn Close Al subplot just was a dud. That middle half of the movie, I felt the Die Hard on a plane just didn't work for me.
If you were going to give this 3 stars, I would have made you Attorney General. But now you can forget that.
Nothing would make me happier, Dave. But I can't.
Well, I'm going to hear what I want to hear. You said you would recommend it if you had a good sound system.
I do, though,
so
think the sound
it.
Design is just so good that it's something that works. Because I just said it, right? I said, if you have a nice sound system, this would be a movie to put on. I am recommending.
I'm going to take that as a recommendation, and I'm going to close this line of inquiry. Everyone, hand up, like, raise your candles. The vigil is complete. We got it. Well, all right. That's Air Force One. Recommendations around the board. We'll end it there. When we return, we will be boarding the other most secure airline in the skies. When Apocalypse Video's Air Prol returns, we'll be boarding Con Air. Until then,
get off my pod. Hey, that's my line.
About 30 minutes, sir.
Mr. Preston.
Sir?
Yeah, could you put the game on now, please?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Jack.
14-13 Michigan. All right, Mr. President.
That guy should be put up against a wall for treason.